You are now listening to Bigfoot and Beyond, featuring the OG bad boys of Bigfoot, the Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive of Squatchology, the Chip and Dale of Bigfoot, and I'm not talking about the cartoon. Please welcome your hosts, the Bigfoot celebrity couple, Biff Clobo, better known as Cliff Berrickman and James Bobo Fay.
Cliff.
Bobo.
We're blessed with a good guest tonight.
Who do you have in store for us?
He's a very controversial figure in the Bigfoot world. Some call him a troll. I call him a flamer. And it's the man himself from Bigfoot Books up in Willow Creek, the modern day Al Hodgson, Steve Strutford.
Very good. The one and only Bigfoot curmudgeon. I love Steve.
Strutty.
Yeah, I'm here. getting all grumpy at you, man. I'm going to have to troll your page. I'm going to go on there and say Bigfoot does not exist all day long. That's what they do to me. Well, sort of.
Yeah, so when you say do it to you, is that only on the coalition page or is that your personal page as well?
Oh, no. I've had a lot of problems lately with trolls just constantly, you know, trying to attack my social media, my cell phone, anywhere I go, basically, they'll show up eventually. We had them on one guy in particular, if not two. I don't know if he was copy-pasting someone else, but he showed up on Reddit, and we got him banned like five times because Jamie from Bluff Creek Project knows the guys who are running the Reddit pages, so we managed to get him sort of put in his place, but you know, he just comes back. This is one of the side effects of Bigfooting, you know. It has nothing to do with field research or whatever, but I don't troll anybody, you know. I just sit here in Willow Creek and do my own thing, and I try to tell it like it is, as honestly as I possibly can, in accordance with logic and you know, scientific method. Such things as that.
So if they're going to get like lip from you, they got to come to you and seek it out in a way, right?
Well, I'm not going on their pages very rarely. You know, I'm on my page doing my own thing with my associates and friends. And we happen to be skeptical, not in a trolly way, I don't think, but in an honest way, you know, we pretty much all of us on there, whether they're believers or not, want Bigfoot to be real. They want Bigfoot to be proven to know more about Bigfoot if Bigfoot is actually real, right? So yeah. We're not doing this to troll people in the coalition group, which we should probably tell more about. But you know, or me in person, I don't exist troll, you know. I do my own thing and think and read constantly, and we have a research project in Bluff Creek that I would hold up against any of them in the country. You know, we're doing our thing there too. So in a prime area, I'd like to add, you know, right on the film site, for instance. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that's what I do, is I comment on the Bigfoot scene. So I'd like to say to these people who complain about the coalition group, you know, don't be so stupid. Like if you want to go online and say the dumbest things you possibly can imagine anyone saying and say them about Bigfoot, well, I'm going to come along and see it one of these days and probably comment on it, you know, in our group. Like, that's what we do with Matthew Johnson, for instance, people of that ilk. But I mean, we'll question anybody. Like, if they say something foolish or unscientific or irrational, it doesn't matter if it's Cliff Berrickman or Kiwoni Lapsaritis, right?
Yeah, because people, when I go to conferences, people say to me, you know, that troll Steve at Bigfoot Books? I'm like, he's like, they think you're the devil.
I know, it's hilarious. Yeah, we've actually been put on like evil lists that got circulated by the woo-woo types. Like, you know, I wasn't even on the top of the evil list. I was like number six or something.
Yeah, you got some climbing to do, buddy.
I know. I thought you earned it by now, you know.
You're top five of my book, Steve.
Well, thanks. I always figure, like, when I first got into this Bigfoot thing, I met the right people at the right place, you know. 2003 at the International Bigfoot Symposium, and then up here in 2007 at the 40th anniversary celebration for the Patterson film, met you guys, you know. And that trip out to Bluff Creek where we all went and drank the Bluff Creek ale from the keg, mm-hmm. that was a good one. I liked that. I kind of saw the light of Bigfoot, the Bigfoot pursuit, the hobby of Bigfooting. You know, it's mostly just having fun with your friends and exploring the possibilities of reality out there.
Yeah, it,
wild.
You nailed it. Yammeron used to say those pearls of wisdom too. It's like Bigfooting at the bottom line. At the end of the day, Bigfooting is kind of just finding people who think similarly to you, and you enjoy spending time with them, and you go camping.
Yeah, and as long as you don't get in a fist fight with them.
Yeah,
you know, like they find the virtual fist fights. But yeah, I mean, I can hang out with a guy like Tom Powell, and he's totally the opposite of me in terms of thinking about these things, but or his personal theories about it, you know, are opposite to me. But he's a great guy and very funny and very smart, you know. So those are the kind of people I appreciate. They don't have to agree with me, you know. I'm not going to come up to you and say, dude, Bigfoot doesn't exist. So I'd appreciate it if the Bigfoot believers didn't come up to me and say, you're closed-minded because you say Bigfoot doesn't exist. And I'm sitting here saying, I didn't say Bigfoot doesn't exist. I said, it seems like it's unlikely that it exists. You know, I'm exploring the possibility that it may be real, given the fact that there are sightings, there are people like my friends and the people I read about constantly who are having experiences of some kind that seem consistent, you know, with the Bigfoot image, the Bigfoot animal, I'd like to think animal, you know, as opposed to a mystical entity from the fifth dimension or whatever.
Fourth,
that's like time. The fifth dimension is where things get really weird.
I heard one time some guy told me it was definitely the 11th dimension they were from.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's inconceivable to humans. I don't think anyone could draw that, you know, or even barely describe it with mathematics.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to hang out with others who don't agree with them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, case in point, today I went fishing with Tom Powell. I was out with him for a couple hours goofing around today. And two nights ago, maybe three, I had dinner and had a great evening with Henry Franzoni. Uh-huh. You know, and fine, I don't know if I can name. Well, I could probably name a couple people who I disagree with more about Sasquatches than those two guys, but I just had a great time with both of them. And of course, they come up with their ideas, and you know, Henry doesn't even claim to be, you know, thinking is. It's like I think he claims himself to be an artist when it comes to Bigfoot. I'm not quite sure what that means, but he says crazy stuff, and I love it. I think it's hilarious, and I'm not laughing at him. These two gentlemen also think it's funny and fun. He's the one who
played the drums in the woods, you know?
Well, yeah.
He doesn't want people to laugh. He should probably avoid doing that. But it was a classic moment, you know, that documentary. And those two guys are foundational intellects and characters in the Bigfoot world.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I take one Tom Powell or Franzoni over 100 crazy woo-woos on Team Squatchin' USA, you know, any day.
But to be fair, their own thing going too. Like they seem to be having a good time. I've got nothing against what I don't think they're right, but they seem to be having a good time, not hurting anybody.
Well, they're exploring something, whether it's like an animal, Bigfoot, or some kind of mystical process. I don't know, but I mean, I really don't think Bigfoot lives underground in massive cave systems, you know, like a whole civilization of them down there. But apparently Tom Powell believes something like that. And
Yeah. I think Henry, Tom has been very influenced by Henry in some ways. And Henry has been very heavily influenced by a wide variety of Native people that he's worked with over the years. So I think he kind of picks and, because, you know, Native beliefs aren't all the same, of course, you know, so I think he picks and chooses the ones that are most interesting to him and kind of runs with it to see what truth might there be.
Yeah, we kind of put the Bigfoot in the origins of Bigfoot in the Native culture more than anything else, you know, that is where it really started. I mean, granted, there are other forms of wild man throughout the world. Here in North America, I mean, it's definitely Native American peoples, and they all have different versions of it. You know, it's not necessarily the same thing. But my experience here locally with the Hoopa people and the Yuroks, mostly the Karuks, they seem to have an interestingly ambivalent attitude. Like, yeah, it's a thing from the spirit world, you know? It's not necessarily a thing that walks around on two legs or looks like a Bigfoot. It's definitely in another world that can, they say, you know, can walk into this one because the worlds are intermeshed. And we just are living in one particular aspect of reality than what other beings like, you know, the ancestors or these mystical entities might live in, you know. So, I mean, I can live with that. But, I mean, I don't know how it fits in with the white man science, you know. We're practicing kind of a European approach to discovery where we want to see the thing and it's objectively real, not a vision, you know, not a spirit, not something that comes in dreams, and, you know, probably not something that walks out of portals and so forth and cloaks itself. That's how I look at it. You know, it's got to be understandable with a rational mind, I think, as all the other things that we actually have understood are, you know, anything that we know has been rationally understood. Otherwise we're just talking about experiences, you know, emotional feelings and stuff. Those are fine too, but I'm not so sure about the reality of feelings. You know, like, can you say that feelings have an objective correlative? Right.
Yeah. We're really talking about shared reality, you know, because to have a conversation or to have understanding with anyone else, you have to come from a place of mutual understanding. And the very basic level of that is kind of reality. You know, we share the same, like our reality touches in a lot of places so we can converse about things.
Reality is a social construct and a personal construct. But reality also exists outside of us altogether. And, you know, we have to have something in common or we lose the ability to interpret our own language, our own culture, and our own world. You know, if you don't follow, say, the rules of grammar and logic, then you cannot actually express a coherent thought. You know, if you're violating those laws, your thinking is actually fundamentally flawed. You know, it's not a valid proposition. And in terms of objective reality, well, it's there whether we open our eyes or not. So we need to have a means of communicating about it with each other. So we have language and we have logic and we have science. And I guess for people who really want to delve into the unknown, we have, psychedelic drugs or religions, you know, for people to explore those things, but they shouldn't be confused, you know?
Well,
it is a different domain, right?
Yeah.
What's that? I think Bobo said something.
You said psychedelic drugs or religion. I said, or you can combine them both.
Well, and entheogens, plant substances that cause us to have radical experiences of a different kind of reality than we're used to receiving through our five senses, you know?
Yeah.
Those are universal things too, actually, has been studied extensively in psychology and, world religions in general. The whole idea that, you know, you can have two people from absolutely different times and cultures, and they can have a very similar experience of something, you know, archetypal, right? Something universal. But I don't know if that's a Bigfoot issue. You know, I don't understand how Bigfoot gets mixed up with these things that mind speak kind of stuff, you know. To me, if there's a Bigfoot, it's a creature, and I'd like to see it just like I see bears out here in the hills, you know.
Yeah, Bigfoot is biology, as far as I can tell. There's so much just squished up with it all. You know, Matt Pruitt was on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about this book about tigers that he read. And he was commenting about how the local people who lived where these tigers were kind of like formed tiger cults, and they had mystical, paranormal sort of beliefs about them. A lot of parallels, actually, to our present day situation with Sasquatches. Because, you know, a lot of the, I'll just say woo folks, although I don't think, like, woo is a really big umbrella because so many different perspectives and beliefs fall under that umbrella term there. But a lot of them sound a lot like religion to me with some of the beliefs, with some of the experiences and the fervent, what's the word, defense that people are willing to go to, you know. I'm gonna find you online, seek you out, and write you a 7-page email, or, you know, 7-paragraph email about stuff you don't care about, you know.
Those are ultra orthodox woo.
Yeah.
Well, there's two different aspects of that issue there, you know. The one is how do we know reality, right? And how do we share reality? Like, what is reality? It's a separate issue from how we come to know it or explore it with our minds. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Tie it back to Bigfoot. So what is Bigfoot, and how do we explore that?
You can put a mystical reality on anything. You could say a bear has spiritual power. You could say trees have spiritual power. But, you know, Bigfoot can also therefore have spiritual power. I mean, in some ways, it could be a thing that doesn't even exist in the objective world and have power. If it's a universal motif, as I think Bigfoot is, globally occurring amongst humanity across large gaps of time there, Bigfoot seems to be an archetype more than anything else. The big question is whether it's something that's based on objective reality, which we can study objectively, or whether it's something that's subjective, you know? So, I mean, science tries to be objective and study things that are external to us, like things that you can touch. And that's not to say their world is limited, because, you know, who discovered quantum physics and energy, of the atom and all these things? That was scientists who did that, not mystics. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with mysticism. I think, like, the native spiritual worldview is totally valid. And I mean, in a lot of ways, which one would you choose to live in if you could have a pure choice, right? To live in the spiritual experience, one with nature or whatever, or to go and be a hyper-rationalist sitting in some library, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've often thought that my perspective on Sasquatch is really boring, compared to a lot of other people's. It seems like their Bigfooting life is probably much more exciting than mine.
Well, roundabout, that's sort of what I was trying to get to saying. If you're a person who's feeling middle-aged and your life has come to a point of boredom, what could be better than to turn woo and go out? Like so many of these people in the Bigfoot world, they're like middle-aged people whose kids have flown the nest, and suddenly they appear in this conversion experience to the Bigfoot spiritual path. And I'm just shocked when I see it because, you know, for me, it was when I was a kid, you know, I saw these things on movies and television about Bigfoot, and I was fascinated that it could be a living animal out there. You know, in all my life, I've sort of been an amateur in the background naturalist, you know, interested in science and things that can be objectively known. I've always kept that separate from the spiritual or mystical types of things that I've also explored, or the pure philosophy that I tend to engage in. You know, it's just an intellectual thing, like trying to get your brain to function efficiently and properly to understand knowledge. A lot of people, they're just born again into Bigfoot. They skip the whole part of it possibly being like a real animal or an objective animal, a physical being. They go right into the magic. And I think, I mean, to me, that's escapism. They're ignoring the fact that they do live in the physical world, call it the physical world. But, I mean, they have to consume energy and process food and live as a biological organism, just like all the other animals do. But you know, some people, you know, they're primed by their culture and by their own personal belief systems to already be ready, you know, to accept that Bigfoot can be walking out of a portal and speaking to you inside of your head, you know, and they've been trained since childhood by their religions, you know, by Jesus or Muhammad or whatever it is coming to talk to you, you know. And, you know, then it's, maybe it's aliens came in your room and you had weird experiences with them. And, you know, that guy Jacques Vallée says, you know, this kind of experience of a mystical dimension of reality related to entities, it seems to be universal. Like in the Middle Ages, we had fairies and elves and pixies and gnomes. And then in the modern world, they became gray aliens from outer space. And I think Bigfoot is kind of like a tangential version of that to a lot of people. Bigfoot is the natural, like, forest version of it rather than this outer space version.
Right.
But the woo, you're saying, like, these people come into it and they just start off woo. There's tons of people that had no thought of the woo, but through their personal experiences, what they've seen and experienced, they get open to the idea of it being a possibility.
Yeah, but you know, if you've never fully examined your belief systems and culture, there's a lot of woo that's just built into us naturally. You know, I didn't always practice skepticism. I was a woo. You know, out of high school, I was into mystical things. I was reading Carlos Castaneda and Theosophy and stuff like that. But I mean, yeah, sometimes people, I think all of us pretty much have weird experiences that we try our best to interpret, you know. Maybe you see something in the woods that strikes you as very strange, or you get this profound sense of fear. You know, I mean, some people, they say they've seen Bigfoot and they come out of it with post-traumatic stress disorder or something of that nature. So, I mean, really, it's hard to deny that something happened to them, right?
I've often thought that these people are just the Bigfoot woo people. You know, I've got nothing against them. I wish them well, you know, but it seems to me that they've experienced something and they expect everyone else to believe that what they've experienced is the empirical truth despite other people's experiences. And that's what kind of rubs me the wrong way. That if I had a complaint about the woo community, it's that it's their insistence that I agree with them.
Yeah. And they get really angry with you. Like I said, about being closed-minded about skepticism. Well, you know, we have, it's like a logical thing, or in science, the null hypothesis. You have to allow for that to be possible. Just as like a purely objective scientist is going to have to allow for other possibilities that they may not have incorporated into science yet. And, you know, one of those is Bigfoot. Because, you know, logically, we can't say Bigfoot does not exist. I mean, that no matter how you express that, it's a personal opinion. You can't prove a negative, you know. I mean, Bertrand Russell made fun of this by saying, well, you know, you could always say there's a teapot orbiting Mars or whatever, or in the asteroid belt, you know. And, like, no one can prove that there's not a teapot orbiting out in space. So, you know, then you can claim anything, like the dragon in your garage who's invisible, you know. But I mean, logically, you can assert the possibility of Bigfoot and allow for it to be a possibility. And what's most intriguing to me is the way that people say they've experienced something that's not supposed to exist by common sense knowledge that most people seem to share. You know, Bigfoot does not exist for most people.
Most cities, not for people that live out in the Olympic Peninsula.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not arguing with them. You know, they just don't believe in Bigfoot. They could if one were brought in and shown on Fox News, and they could actually verify that it wasn't a suit full of roadkill or whatever, you know? Like we've seen too many times before. But, you know, there has to be a means of discussing and sharing reality that is reliable and verifiable and true and can be used between people. Because, I mean, we're a social animal. And there's no way that anyone's going to discover all this on their own. But if you have your own vocabulary and your own way of thinking, and it goes so far that you are just making up your own reality, which I think a lot of these people are doing, you've stepped outside of that sort of social contract of the mind, and you've entered into solipsism, you know, like you're the only person in the world having your own experiences. And they'll even say to you, well, I experienced it, so it's real, you know. But that's not the same sense of reality that something is real. Like you can count on water boiling when you put it on the stove.
So that's why people hate you.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably saying it right now. Why doesn't he just shut up and, you know, talk about something more interesting, like, you know, Bigfoot did this, Bigfoot did that.
Stories, man. How do you feel about stories? Like, because I think we're at a point now in the Bigfoot thing that, you know, stories are cool, but we get to learn that, oh, a Bigfoot was there at a certain time and place, or, hey, it did something weird. It walked backwards, or, you know, did something like that. But at this point, I don't think stories are doing much for us, except for entertaining others around a campfire. You probably hear more than your fair share of stories. What do you think about those things?
You know, if I hear a story from a person who's looking at me and my presence, or, you know, maybe talking on the phone, that makes a big difference. You know, I can assess where they're coming from, who they are, and what kind of effect this experience might have had upon them. But I mean, the stories we get these days in the Bigfoot world, they're coming from, it's really like, you know, creepypasta fiction writers. There's a lot of this going on now with like that PacWest Bigfoot guy up north. You know, I mean, Bobo, you know, you've like experienced this. He talks about Humboldt County and stuff that we know about. And, you know, in some cases, you have investigated these sightings, right? And he takes it and just writes a fictional story about it. that has nothing to do with what actually happened.
And he's popular. I hate that.
Yeah, he's making money too. And he at first he even admitted it, you know, that he was writing fiction.
Oh, he admitted. And
he was trying to make money marketing this thing. I mean, that's all good and fine, but you should have a big stamp on the front of it, whether you're on a TV show, on the Travel Channel or whatever, which says this is fiction. This is not based on reality, except a small kernel of it. And then you should say what that kernel is and say where your source came from so that other people can go and check it out. You know, like get Daniel Perez to go look at it 10 years later. And, you know, maybe it was in a book or a journal or in a documentary. And you should have notes which say where you got that from, you know, rather than just taking some idea, some story and telling it to such a degree that it becomes like Chinese whispers or whatever, that game, you know, where you whisper something in someone's ear and then they tell it to the next person.
Telephone.
Around the whole room and it comes back to the first person and it's totally changed into something else.
Yeah, it's called telephone.
Yeah, telephone, yeah.
Was that your group, Steve? Were you guys the guys that did that investigation on the Travel Channel Bigfoot show?
Yeah, I don't know if I can claim credit for that in my group, but I know there were a lot of questions that we raised early on and a lot of very smart people in that group, you know, the Coalition for Critical Thinking and Bigfoot Research on Facebook is what it is. But we like anyone who wants to join, come on over. But the thing is, yeah, we had exposed a lot of it already just by critical thinking, you know. Well, you can see in that nest that he found that it was clearly a human-sized, human-made shelter. And there were cut branches in it, you know, and it looked just like anything that might be constructed by Boy Scouts, right? So, I mean, one step at a time, it was exposed, each episode exposed more. And then at some point, we were asking, and I think a lot of other people across the country were asking, where is this thing being shot, you know? So we had people on Google Earth looking for those features of the landscape that could be identified. Just like, you know, we found Matt Johnson's secret Soha habituation area on Google Earth, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, someone eventually looked into it. Like, you know, I remember asking about, well, where is that cemetery? You know, that should be identifiable on the map. Like an old mining town obviously was somewhere around there for there to be people buried in the middle of nowhere. You know, they were claiming to be out in the wilderness, right? So why is there a truck there that, you know, looks like a grocery store delivery truck from the 30s or the 40s? You know, and all these things traced back to a dude ranch. Somebody eventually found it, the Anthone Ranch. It's outside of Bend, Oregon. And they weren't even in the wilderness or the national forest even. They were in a big dude ranch that includes a lot of cattle, landscape, grazing lands, and also some mountain with forest. And, you know, obviously they made up the topography and the geological formations of that landscape, which they showed on the television show.
Well, I heard that the ranch is huge. Is it like 60,000 acres or something?
Yes, it's really big. And, you know, they claimed that they had an algorithm which told them where to go because, like, this is where the Bigfoot activity is. But if you look at this Bigfoot sightings map of Oregon, that ranch is, like, right in the middle of a total wasteland of Bigfoot sightings. There's nothing really reported out there. You know, it's like a desert, an empty space on that map that has all those little pins marking the sightings and stuff. So if they had an algorithm, it told them exactly where they shouldn't have gone. I mean, you know, no matter how big the ranch is, there's people on it. So you'd think if there were Bigfoot sightings occurring there, they would be reported to the BFRO and other groups, just like all the other ones are. And yeah, you know, I think it's a useful exercise to look into these kind of things, because if someone's BSing you, it's not doing any good for the collective endeavor we have of finding the truth, you know. And if the truth means that this was fake and it was a fraud, then so be it, you know.
Well, that's unfortunate that's the case, but I know, you know, we're Travel Channel is owned by Discovery Networks, and Discovery didn't want any more fake stuff in their shows after the mermaid show and that Russian Yeti killer one, whatever, Bigfoot one.
Well, the Megalodon one too. I know Animal Planet took a lot of heat when they did the mermaid and the Megalodon stuff.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, you'd have to put that on the production company itself, you know. And then when you're out there filming, like, those guys are all novices, you know, like a new show, first season. They'll try to get you to film stuff and say stuff that you really shouldn't, but they get you to do it, and they edit it in a way that you wouldn't even expect. So, yeah, you can't really hate on the guys on the show. It's usually on the production company.
Well, sure enough, even in, like, in Finding Bigfoot, I found the process to be a lot more honest than I saw on that other show. But when I was on the show, they definitely edited me. You know, I talked for 5 to 10 minutes, and they put 1.25 minutes of me talking in there, and it was all cut up into pieces and reassembled back together. Right. You know, with me saying, you know, I never saw what it was, I don't know what it was, or, you know, you have to be skeptical about your own experiences. They cut out all that, and instead they put a picture of the Bigfoot, you know, coming down the hill, like with their CGI guys doing it. And, you know, every once in a while, they'd put a picture of Matt's face, like, looking astonished, you know, like, that's a Sasquatch.
I don't like that. Just kidding. You're talking about this, for the people that don't know, that's your experience you had at the house that night?
Well, that really happened, you know. I've told the story many times, so I'll be brief, but it was something coming down the hill, sitting right where I am now, out in my front porch, and there's forest right there, which goes on, you know, for many, many miles. As you know, Humboldt County, it's just like a big wall of green. But, you know, something was coming down the hill. I thought maybe it was just like a deer or a bear, something kind of creepy crawling, you know, very quiet crunching of the forest debris. And then I heard it kind of crack against, like, you know, it sounded like a stick or a piece of something breaking, like it had tripped over something in the underbrush. And then it comes down the hill, that I hear this sound like whomp, 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 and then crash down into the brush at the bottom. I was like, what the heck is this? You know, I was like immediately up grabbing my flashlight that I keep out here, you know, and I didn't see it, right? But the ground was vibrating under my feet here. This, it's a concrete slab porch here, the foundation of it. And, you know, this was maybe 30 yards away from me at the edge of my yard here. You know, it's not fenced. It's not like a suburban house. It's up on the hills behind Willow Creek, you know. So I don't know what that thing was. It moved around the side of my yard eventually, and it didn't just take off. It hid in the back brush back, you know, away from the property line where it wasn't as cleared for fire safety. And it was back in there, whatever it was. Stopped and I stood there for like 10 minutes or whatever, you know, listening and just wondering what to do next, you know. And I didn't want to go into the woods there because it was dense thicket, and I had just moved into this house just a few days before that, you know, or whatever it was, a couple weeks. So, like, you know, this this thing was there in the kind of unknown woods, and I wasn't about to go out there. My flashlight battery was dying. I just stood there and I thought, well, I'll walk back towards the house slowly and see what it does, you know? So that's when it eventually moved. It went around the back of the yard into the neighboring house yard, which was unoccupied at the time. And it moved behind a wall of plants and grapevine and stuff that's there and took off down the dirt road. And I never did get an eyeball on it. But, you know, I told that to Finding Bigfoot people. I didn't know if it was a Bigfoot.
Did you hear breathing, just seemed... growling or something?
What's that?
Didn't you hear heavy breathing or growling or something?
Yeah, when it moved near to my house across this little driveway I have here, a gravel driveway, and then there's the plants right there which were blocking the view. I could hear it breathing, you know, like you can hear a bear breathe or whatever. Right. When it's walking, it kind of snorts and breathes. That's what I heard, was something like that. It was like aspirated with breath, and it was also kind of a grunt, like as it walked by. And well, it was, you know, downhill from me. So the sound, the best sense I could make of the sound was that it was coming from an elevated position above the ground. It wasn't down on all fours like a bear. You know, I could hear it up here where my ears are. And I'm like, you know, maybe 10 feet above that house down the hill. So what could it have been? I don't know. I mean, this is the kind of thing that intrigues me. And it's my own experience. You know, I know other people have experiences like this too. Some people even do claim to have seen the Bigfoot, you know. I mean, not even getting into the stuff of people like standing there and talking to them or whatever.
Well, anyone skeptical of that, I don't blame them one bit, but.
Well, there's plenty of people who've seen Bigfoot just like in a totally ordinary way. I mean, just like I could have seen that Bigfoot if I had a better flashlight or if I had a decent night vision scope at the time or whatever. But I didn't, you know, maybe I would have seen the Bigfoot, and then I would say to you right now, I'm certain that they exist. Or, if it was ambiguous, I'd have to tell you, even though I think I saw it, I'm still not certain. I have to question my own mind and my own assumptions. And, you know, human perception in general is notoriously fallible. If you explore the concept of witnesses, you know, eyewitness testimony can be damning in court, but it's not going to hold up to science, right?
But you have to admit, you might have had a Bigfoot encounter.
No doubt. I mean, I could have. I might have. And I've had other experiences similar to that. But because I've never gotten a full view of anything that I would say, that's a Squatch.
I'm
not going to do it, even though you guys do, like on the TV show and in personal life, and you know, you've had your own encounters and stuff, your sightings, Bobo. I mean, it's hard for me to like just say to you like that didn't happen, right? I mean, you saw something
for sure.
So I have to ask, well, what was it that you saw? And I have to ask myself, what was it in my yard? Because I don't think it was a bear. How can a bear on four legs stomp the ground like that to make the ground vibrate as if they were bipedal footfalls? It wasn't a deer, though, the way that deer will bound off into the woods, like they make go thump, 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 right? You can feel that. You can feel the vibration of a deer. But it's a much more like sharp and precise thump.
Yeah.
Like what I heard was like a big thump, you know, boom, boom, boom. I mean, not earth shattering like a dinosaur walking by, but I mean, it was noticeable. And you know, I sit out here at night smoking or reading or whatever, and I'm totally always listening and observing because I think, well, maybe there's something out there, you know? And like, you know, I've had bears come right up to my front porch here. Like sometimes you don't even hear them.
No,
you suddenly hear like a snort. You're like, what the heck? There's a bear right there. And I did not hear it coming up to my house. I mean, that's just totally strange, but I'm always paying attention.
Yeah, black bears can be super, so like, they're so like, you were talking before, like they're snorting and huffing and, you know, whatever. But when they go into stealth mode, they are quiet.
Yeah, it freaked me out. I mean, I was sitting here for a while. I was hearing a little sound, like I thought it was maybe a mouse or something, you know, but it was a bear. And whatever this Bigfoot-like experience I had, that's exactly what was happening. It was coming down the hill like that, very quiet and stealthy, and I could just sort of hear it up there. But yeah, when it started making the big noises, I suddenly had no explanation for what it was, you know?
Yeah.
And living where I do, Bigfoot is a natural go-to explanation for that kind of an experience, even though I don't know for sure. You know, I always say on podcasts and stuff that I do that, like, we've never found Bigfoot on our trail cameras, you know, 8 years of trail cameras and not a single Bigfoot on it. And that's like with 20 cameras or so running, you know, all year round, 15 to 20 cameras all year round, even in the winter when no one goes in there. You know, I always say we have never had a Bigfoot on the cameras and we've never had a definitive sighting amongst us either. We found like tracks, you know, they're kind of maybe tracks like up at Onion Lake, but you know, there's so many bears walking around up there that that area, it can fool you. You know, I mean, we've made tracks ourselves in the mud around the lake and had people come back from that. Like a few days later, they went to the same spot and they saw the footprints in the mud and they thought maybe they were Bigfoot tracks. Because, you know, squishy mud, you're not going to see the boot, the sole of the shoe. So he showed me that picture. I said, no, we were just there. Like, I remember that track in the mud. You know, we put it there. And they still didn't really want to believe it. But, I mean, we've had those weird howling sounds that we heard up on the Blue Creek Mountain ridge there.
Yeah. At the
section up there. And I think you've heard them and Rowdy's heard them. And
I've only heard one. And all my years of frequenting Bluff Creek, I've only heard one distant, long vocalization that I would attribute to Sasquatch. And I always thought that was weird. And frankly, I've always kind of put it on Bobo. Like, he blew the place out early because he's been working that spot since the early 80s.
Maybe you were there too in the pretty early days. And
yeah, I started going there in 94.
Yeah, but it's always been quiet up there.
Even now, it's very sparsely used. Most of the time when we're there, there's no one else there.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we go there and we see people, it's not at the film site usually. It's at Laos Camp. And usually they're locals who like to camp out there for a week or whatever during the summer.
Yeah.
That kind of like Native American camping thing that they do.
Yeah, there's a lot of natives go there.
Yeah, they love it.
Then deer season, there's usually a couple guys hunting in there.
Yeah, we've seen some hunter guys.
Well, but you guys made a pretty important scientific discovery on your trail cams out there. Tell us about that.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Sometimes in the course of looking for Bigfoot, you make other discoveries, you know? And so we've always valued those other discoveries, whether they're botanical, historical, or zoological or whatever they are. And you know, we've all learned a lot in doing this process, you know, not just like, oh, this is Bigfoot, this is Bigfoot behavior. You know, we've learned a lot about other things. And one of the coolest things was when we saw this little creature on the film site cameras that was we thought was just some kind of weasel or whatever, you know, and we started kind of looking into it, like, what kind of weasel is that? And well, turns out what we had here in the past, native to this area, is a subspecies of marten. And it was the Humboldt marten. That's what we have here. We don't have other martens here. And so we all kind of look at it. Jamie says, like, I wonder if that's a Humboldt marten. Because, you know, the thing about them is that they were thought to have been completely extirpated, you know, an extinct subspecies. And in the 90s, I think it was 96, there was one little trackway found, and someone identified by the footprint that had to be a Humboldt marten. So they put up a trail camera and they got a picture of it. And so since then, you know, there's been a more study to find this animal. And there's estimated to only be like 100 of them in California, and, you know, maybe another 100 up in Oregon, approximately. So, I mean, this is an animal that's more rare than a Bigfoot could possibly be.
I saw one night up on outside of Crescent City on Walker Road where the Playboy Redwood footage was got. I used to go up there a lot, and I thought it was a small wolverine running down the road. It was running right in front of me in my high beams. Then when I found out about the Humboldt marten, looked that up, that's what it was.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of these kind of animals running. You know, Fisher's marten, at least one marten, ringtails. I've seen them just flying around here. But they're prospering pretty well down in the redwood zone. But, you know, of course, it's very fragile. If you disrupt one of their habitats, you could theoretically plummet them into extinction right there, you know. Because they're not going to adapt well with such low population numbers. But we've documented in Bluff Creek, with the Bluff Creek Project, we call it now, you know, we've documented them repeatedly and in multiple numbers. Like we have what seems to be a mated pair. You know, they're running around together in some of our images. Obviously at home in their environment. You know, this is a super promising kind of thing. If they're breeding and Bluff Creek is slowly growing back to its more natural state, you know, after years of logging and stuff, this is really great, promising thing, you know. It's also one of those signs we can take as a possible indicator that Bigfoot could be viable out there. I mean, if there are Bigfoot animals, they could live there, because look at all the other animals that are prospering there. Tons of bears, tons of mountain lions. We've had mountain lion families, bear families. You know, you can, over the course of a year, you can watch the babies grow up, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's really prospering out there. And I mean, this is like one of the most exciting things about the project. Whether or not we found Bigfoot would almost be like secondary, you know, to that.
Not really. But
not really. But yeah, you know what?
You guys got an awesome collection of shots. Where can people see those?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. If you just Google Bluff Creek Project, you'll find like our blog and other things. There's a Facebook page. On YouTube, it's all one word. So it's just Bluff Creek Project. Drop that all one word into the search engine at YouTube, and you'll see our page, which has highlight videos and all kinds of other wacky stuff. You know, animals doing some crazy stuff, you know, like screaming female mountain lions in heat, you know, like we got, you know, like 30 seconds of that. And then a reply from a male, apparently the male mountain lion on the other side of the camera. You can hear him back there growling in response. And, you know, this is the classic mountain lion song that sounds like a woman being murdered in the woods, they always say, you know.
Right.
Just horrifying if you didn't know what it was, right?
It's happened to me, dude. It is. If you don't know what you're hearing, the first time I heard it, I was freaked out.
Oh yeah. But I mean, I've seen raccoons and foxes make almost as scary a noise. But yeah, I don't know, that is the satisfaction of just learning and hopefully studying these animals. I was saying the where to go see it. So, some of the unique content is on our Facebook page. But if you go to, like I said, the blog, it's like a web page, you'll find it's bluffcreekproject.blogspot.com. And Jamie Wayne is mostly in charge of that. He is the main guy with the trail cameras, although Rowdy and Robert have been doing a lot of it too. Me, I'm more like kicking back in my scholar's chair these days, but that's where to go. And the blog page has a bunch of little links that you can click, including like directions to the film site, which I think is currently on there. Like sometimes we take it down because we feel like there's too many yahoos going there now. Well, it's up there usually. And if you don't see the directions to the film site, you can certainly contact us and get it. That way I don't have to be the unpaid tour guide over and over and over again at my bookstore. all the links are there. So if you want to donate to the project, you can. It's all publicly funded, transparent data. We don't take any proprietary or profit motive to the pictures. So, if you just give us credit, you can use any of that video or any of those images for your own personal use, like in documentaries or whatever. Also there are like field updates and all that other kind of stuff there. You might be really impressed with the drone footage that Rowdy Kelly has been getting. He's got some really top-notch drones with great cameras on them now. And we can fly it from the bridge down at the bottom of Bluff Creek before you get to Louse Camp. We can fly it from that hill all the way up to the film site.
Wow. So wow.
That's online now too. It's really dramatic. You can see the whole course that Roger and Bob would have ridden that day on the horses. And finally with the drones, we get a view of the film site from above. But it still doesn't really help. Like when we were trying to find the film site, it was really lost. The site was lost to forest, and you couldn't see the site for the trees, as it were. Even then, when you're looking and you know where the big tree is, you can't really tell which one it is from the drone footage, because there are all these old growth trees growing in there, and it just hides itself like immediately.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bigfoot and Beyond. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes. Subscribe to Bigfoot and Beyond wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Bigfoot and Beyond Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Bigfoot and Beyond, that's an N in the middle, and tweet us your thoughts and questions with the hashtag Bigfoot and Beyond.